You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
You're on riverboat gambling trips.
You're gonna die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Monday, June 13th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DM's always open for you. And subscribe so you get this podcast once it goes live. We will talk to Katie Mox, host of The Betting Exchange on MSG in New York City. Katie, a diehard Warriors fan that refuses to hedge. What's it like growing up in a competitive family? And how did the pandemic affect Katie's career? All that and more coming up later on in the show. This is a surprise Peekaboo Monday episode, if you will, but wanted to get a show up before Game 5 in the NBA Finals. Before we get into anything from over the weekend or anything ahead, wanted to point out we got our first NBA draft bet from the coach, Mike Helfgott, and I tweeted this out about 20 minutes ago just to give you an idea of the timestamp and how quickly this stuff moves when the information comes out. Mike sent me a text, and at, 3:15 Eastern time, sent out the tweet, at ChickenXDinner, M. Williams over 12.5, minus 130. Now, at that point, DraftKings was minus 125, and PointsBet was minus 130 to go over 12.5 on Williams. That is no longer the case. Within 15 minutes, it's down at PointsBet, and DraftKings is now dealing over 12.5 at minus 185. They move fast, but so do we. And that's the reality of these draft plays. You're going to see this stuff go. So Helfgott has some good intel on Mark Williams over 12.5. Be on the lookout for other books to throw this stuff up. Nothing yet at FanDuel. Didn't see anything BetMGM or at Caesars. But DraftKings and PointsBet are taking the most options right now. Not the biggest bets, but they have the most cereal in the cereal aisle, if you will. So we're hearing that Williams definitely is a good bet to go over 12.5, and the DraftKings market is reflective of that, from minus 125 to minus 185 in about 20 minutes' time. That's why you sign up for those notifications in draft season, NFL, NBA, the coach is the best. Uncle Kirk did it again. This guy, Mo Donegal, victorious at the Belmont Stakes. And that is three real races that Kirk had to beat on. Now, we didn't get the cash in the Kentucky Derby, but still giving us a future on White Abario in February, March at 40-1. Horse goes off about 10-1 or so at Churchill Downs. Didn't get us to the money, but still the right size, wrong shape. And then Kirk delivered in legs 2 and 3 of the Triple Crown. Early voting at the Preakness, 5-1. Mo Donegal at the Belmont, 5-2. That horse looked like it got shot out of a cannon at the end of the race. Didn't find a wedding. I know many people wondering, did he make it to a wedding for the Belmont? Nope, I did not. We were at a house party out in Massachusetts, and Jay Saracen, hat tip to him, was able to get the race on his phone because the party we were at, the cable wasn't working. So we're watching this race on his iPhone, which is, again, inverted. We're watching it hot dog style, left to right. And I had my arms around his neck down the home stretch, and then the place just went up for grabs. I remember somebody asked Jay, who won the race? He's like, well, everything Sammy said was going to happen, happened. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't give full credit to Uncle Kirk, Kirk Rockwell, at Winning Angle. He's the horse guru. I talk to him, he tells me what to do, and we make money. And he had said all week long, find the right horse with closing speed, because the Belmont is the longest of the three. 1.5-mile track. And remember, Mo Donegal finished 5th at Churchill Downs, but if that race was any longer, Mo Donegal was coming. Rich Strike stole the headlines, 80-1 horse, closed like a maniac down the stretch, but Mo Donegal was coming too. And then we talk about the Preakness, and it's like Preakness isn't really that long. So this was a race that you wanted the closing speed. And we the people set the tone, but Mo Donegal finished it. And Nest, if that race was any longer, if it was a mile and three quarters, Nest may have won the Belmont Stakes. But the two Rapoli horses finished 1-2, Mo Donegal and Nest. And happy to be able to share the winning horse of the Preakness and the Belmont Stakes on Nesson. That's amazing. And Kirk is just a savage. He did it again. If you're not following Kirk at Winning Angle for horse stuff, you're doing it wrong. Let's see. Game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight. I can only think about this stat, which is now 66-0-1 in the last 67 NBA Finals games. It's unbelievable. An absolute doozy of a stat dating back to the last game of the 2011 NBA Finals. According to Ralph Michaels from Wager Talk, the winner of a finals game is 66-0-1 ATS over that span when the line is 6 or less. So you look at the game tonight, Warriors a 4-point favorite in Game 5, and while you might be looking at that Golden State money line, minus 170, minus 175, the proof is in the pudding. Just lay the points at minus 110 instead of paying the extra 70 cents or 80 cents or whatever this number is going to climb to by the tip time. And for you Celtics backers out there, rather than taking 3.5, 4, minus 110, there's 10 years of data explaining why it's better in the long haul when the spread is small in the finals, take the money line. Plus 140, plus 150. Can I drive the point home again? Better to lay 110 and lay the points than lay 180. Better to take 140 on the money line than lay the minus 110. I'm feeling good. Got a Warriors future. Also have the Warriors to win this series pre-flop. Laid 140, 145. I thought they were going to win game one. Turns out they lose game one, win game two. So now I'm pretty much right back where I started, and I'm not going to hedge off this. But if I were going to, the one market I would look to would be the NBA Finals MVP, which has been a back-and-forth type market. Going into the series, Curry's the favorite. Well, Tatum's favorite after game one, Curry after game two, Tatum after game three, and now Curry after game four. He erupts for 43 points at the Garden, enemy territory, and now he's a favorite. He was plus 205 before game four, now minus 150 at multiple American sports books. So you got to risk 150 to win 100 instead of betting 100 to win 205. He's the front runner. Everybody knows it, and everybody wants to bet it now. That's the problem. And the books are going to make you pay a premium. But it doesn't mean another player can't win NBA Finals MVP. If Boston can pull the upset tonight, as a small road dog, mind you, the odds for Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown will drastically shift. And if you look at the way that these markets line up with the outright title market, you'll make more money betting on one of those two players than you will on Boston to win the championship. Celtics like plus 110, plus 15 to win the title. Tatum at FanDuel, plus 180. Jaylen Brown, 7-1. And before you start foaming at the mouth, oh my God, look at Andrew Wiggins, 150-1. Marcus Smart, 250-1. Klay Thompson, 440-1 at FanDuel. Understand, none of those players are winning the award. It's one of three. It's been one of three for multiple games now. The market has told you if you draw a line under Jaylen Brown, that's it. There's a reason these sports books are trying to trick you, trying to entice you to take a shot for a ridiculous payout. Please don't fall for it. Yeah, it's a nice bet on Andrew Wiggins at 120-1. It's not winning. Robert Williams, 300-1. Good payout, losing bet. The market is telling you that nobody under Brown is winning. Curry, consensus price about minus 140. Tatum about plus 170. And then Brown, I see some books have Brown at 5-1, others at 6, 650. FanDuel's got a 7. Shop around, per usual. But those three are the only three. And Tatum and Brown still very realistic. If Tatum scores 30-plus in a Celtics upset tonight, He will be the favorite heading into game six, even if Curry balls out. It's also hard to validate Tatum being around 2-1 with Brown at 7-1 because the stats are pretty straightforward. They're pretty similar through four games of the NBA Finals. Tatum averaging 22.3 points, Brown averaging 22.3 points. Same total for points. Each player, 7 boards a game. Now, Tatum has 4 more assists, 7.8 to 3.8 for Brown. They both have a steal per game, and then Tatum shooting 34%, Brown shooting 44%. For my money, Steph Curry, hands down the best player in this series. But he's not a lock to win Finals MVP. He's just the hottest name on the block after going into the Garden and dropping 43 in the Celtics' eyeballs. But if Boston's stingy defense can stifle Curry and company in game number 5, you're going to see a new betting favorite for the 5th time this series. Like I said, Curry, Tatum, Curry, Tatum, Curry. That's before the first game and after all the others. I think Brown 7-1 is worth a flyer for some pizza money. Now, that's a much easier hedge than coming out and saying, well, I'm going to bet Boston at plus 110 because I don't want to do that. I feel good about Golden State winning the title. My bet is only based off of what I already have. If you have a big ticket on Boston to win the NBA championship, you're probably looking in a different direction. I don't think you want to double down on Celtic players. You probably want to throw a little bit on Steph Curry. But if you're a Warriors backer, I'm telling you, looking at this market and seeing Tatum at plus 180 and Brown 7-1, it doesn't make sense. There's no fucking chance Tatum should be that short compared to Brown. And what happens if Jaylen Brown scores 30 in game 5 and the Celtics win? I wonder what that market looks like. Maybe Tatum, Curry, Brown? I don't know that it's Tatum, Brown, Curry. You can't move Curry to like 3-1, but Curry definitely doesn't have minus 150 next to his name anymore. The narrative is Jason Tatum, best player on the team. You understand all that. But if Brown scores 30, 35 points, Tatum scores 20, Celtics win, how is Jaylen Brown not the favorite? Steph will have better stats, but this is the one league where you need to be on the winning team. In fact, it's worth bringing up, there's one player in the history of the NBA Finals that has won Finals MVP on the losing team. You know who it is? Jerry West, 1969. Lakers fell to the Celtics in 7 games. One time it's happened where the Finals MVP came from the losing team. There's a lot of talk now. Well, even if the Celtics win, Curry wins the MVP. Maybe, but unlikely. Steph's stats are insane. But this league has proven you need to win the championship to be the MVP of the championship. I saw this from Johnny Buckland. He brought this to my attention on Twitter. Very interesting. At JohnnyBuckland04. He asked me, why would I take a 3-team same-game parlay that includes a Tampa Bay shutout when the odds are better when you just bet the shutout? And I'm thinking, oh boy, this will be good. And he attached a couple pictures to his tweet, which I retweeted at Chicken X Dinner. DraftKings was boosting a road to three-peat. Tampa Bay Lightning win by shutout. Tampa Bay Lightning over 1.5 goals. Tampa Bay Lightning win first period. That 3-team parlay was plus 850. On the very same app, Andre Vasilevsky to record a shutout was 9-1. So you get the shutout, it's 9-1, no questions asked. But if Tampa Bay gets the shutout in that 3-team parlay, you still need Tampa Bay to have scored 2 goals and win the first period to win that bet at worse odds. It's amazing how this happens inside the same app. And it's not just DraftKings or FanDuel, PointsBet, MGM, Caesars, whatever. This happens all over the place. But Johnny's looking through the app. He's like, wait a minute. I need 3 things to happen at plus 850, and I need 1 of the 3 to happen, I get 9-1. What am I missing here? Johnny, you're missing nothing. It's been proven now with the way that these companies operate, you need to double and triple and sometimes quadruple check your work. Why would you bet the three-peat parlay when you can bet the straight and get 50 cents more and only need one of the three? Baffling, isn't it? Last thing before we get to Katie Mox. It looks like there's some value on these Tampa Bay Lightning players to win the Conn Smythe. And, of course, this is if you're not a believer in Colorado. Many of you are. But think about this. Cale Makar, Nathan MacKinnon, the clear number 1-2 punch on top. But if you don't like Colorado, you're getting pretty decent prices on the following three players and shop around. Vasilevskiy in net, who was 10-1 before they bounced the Rangers, plus 375 at Caesars, 4-1 MGM, 4-1 DraftKings, 450 FanDuel, 5-1 at PointsBet. The 100 makes you 375 here and 500 there. Kucherov, plus 360 at Caesars, 4-1 MGM, DraftKings PointsBet, 475 at FanDuel. Make an extra $1.15 from Caesars to FanDuel. Steven Stamkos, 14-1 at FanDuel, 15-1 at DraftKings, 16-1 MGM, Caesars, and PointsBet. 100 at the top wins you 14, 16 at the bottom. You're betting 200, 2,800 against 3,200. You got to shop around here. I like Colorado a whole lot. I guess my biggest concern in this series is when do the Lightning run out of gas? I've been sort of hinting at that for a while, but they just appear to be able to figure out a way to slow you down, which bodes well, I guess, over the long haul of this series. I'm a little nervous about them early. Like, I'm not going to make a bet on Tampa Bay to win the series, especially not with Game 1 looming. And I really think, you know, Colorado's a team that comes out of the chute extremely strong. I don't want to fade them early in this series. It's a weird, weird mix, though. I'm looking right now, Colorado open minus 170, actually down a bit. So getting some money in the market are the Tampa Bay Lightning. Colorado minus 156 at Circa, minus 160 at Westgate, 160 at Caesars. Some offshore shops about 158, 159, 160. Total six, which seems high for a game with Vasilevskiy in net. But right now to win the series, Colorado minus 180. Minus 185. I don't want to lay. I'm not laying that with 185. That's not happening. I also think they lose game one. Colorado goes and wins 4-2 or whatever, 5-0, whatever the score is. As long as they win, that's going to 3-1, or 1-3, if you will. And then you can get Tampa plus 255, plus 260. They earn the split. Go back home. It's anybody's series. But those are some really interesting splits on Vasilevskiy from 375 to 5-1, Kucherov from 360 to almost 5-1, and then Stamkos, 14, 15, and 16-1. It's the same exact bet, but you're getting a bigger payout. Not much bigger, but bigger. It's like, why would you spend $5 on gas when it's 360 over there? Why would you spend $16 on something when you can get it for 14 over there? It's just common sense. And having multiple outs continues to be one of the most important parts of this racket. If you only have one sports book, you're doing it wrong. Because the more options you have, the better prices you'll get, and the more money you're going to make. Joining us for the first time on Chicken Dinner, host of The Betting Exchange on MSG Networks. You can see her on television in New York City. Katie Mox with us on Chicken Dinner at Katie Mox, M-O-X. Sup, Mox?
What's up, Sammy P? Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. I just hope we get two more wins. And by we, I have sort of thrown myself into Warriors Nation. Got a future bet on them, double-digit odds. You're a diehard Warriors fan, big San Francisco sports fan, but you don't have to go on TV in Boston every day and act like you don't like the Warriors.
Thank God. That would be absolute torture for me. I do feel bad for you because I know that we discussed you've got a pretty big futures ticket riding on the Warriors, much bigger than mine. But Yeah, I mean, I understand and can relate when you work for a station in a local market. You, of course, have to be very positive about their teams. And to be fair, there's a lot of positive things to say about the Celtics and how they've performed in the playoffs and certainly in this series. But it would be hard to go against a big ticket like that.
Is there any truth to the notion that Boston is still a better basketball team, but Golden State has the best player on the court? Is there any truth to that for you?
No. There's no truth to that for me. Look, I think that Boston has the better defense, and their defense at times has been absolutely suffocating to the Warriors. I do think that the Warriors have not just the best player, but they have the best shooters. Now, of course, not all of them perform every single night. But if we look at a team who has health on their side, we look at a team who has rest on their side and has the ability to score a ton of points, I still think that's on the Warriors' side.
And you made a future bet on the Dubs. You got about 6-1, I think, early in the postseason. Is there any thought of hedging that? Would your Warrior blood even let you bet on Boston to win the title?
No, it's positive vibes only. We are riding until the wheels come off. And basically, look, I'm obviously a Bay Area sports fan. I've been high on the Warriors for a very long time, but there was a lot of injuries this season. We didn't actually see this death lineup, this fast five, until the very first series in the playoffs. And once I saw those five together and saw what they were able to do, I was like, oh yeah, you know, plus 575, let's ride. And I've been riding it ever since. So I'm definitely not going to put any bad juju out there by hedging that bet, because I still think the Warriors win this thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, hedging is a personal choice. And there are people that I think sometimes over-hedge, especially when you get to a point where there are four teams left in the finals or in the playoffs, excuse me, and then they have a bet on team A and they're like, well, if I bet B and C and D at all these different prices, and then it's like, that's lame. Nobody wants to have a bet on all four teams when there are four teams left. There's something to be said about going with your gut and riding the right bet. And look, at this point, I mean, you're the favorite in the series. Golden State's like minus 130, minus 140. It's not like you're even going to get your money's worth hedging on Boston. The one angle that I think is interesting is a sprinkle on Jaylen Brown to win finals MVP. I know that's bad juju, but like if you're looking to hedge, that's probably the only way I would hedge at this point. A little bit on Jaylen Brown to win finals MVP. And that's all I would do. Like, I don't want to bet the Celtics either.
I agree with you. I think that definitely has the most value. And on the Celtics side, I mean, he's been playing absolutely phenomenally. I do think if the Warriors win, of course, it's going to be Steph Curry. Who else? But yeah, if the Celtics can somehow squeak out this in a game seven, then I think that is the best hedge as well. But you know me, not doing the bad juju. We're Steph Curry.
How did you get into sports betting, Katie?
So it's kind of an interesting story. I have always been a huge sports fan. Obviously, like you said, big San Francisco Bay Area sports fan, big Niners fan. When I was living in Los Angeles, I was still a season ticket holder for the 49ers. And I would fly home to every single home game. It was me, my dad, and my two brothers. And I was a ticket holder ever since they came to Levi's. So for quite a while. And I was super knowledgeable about sports. I loved it. I, of course, dipped my toe into the fantasy world. I feel like that's the gateway drug for gambling for a lot of people. And I ended up meeting this guy, Bob Benery, who is, he's a Boston guy, actually.
Yep.
And he's on social media. He for a while, did these kind of parodies of what sports announcers were actually thinking. And now he hosts a podcast, the Full Send podcast with the Nelk Boys. But at the time, he was launching a sports-focused podcast. I didn't follow him. He had about 2 million followers, but a lot of my friends did. And they were looking for a girl to come, who was knowledgeable about sports, that lived in the Los Angeles area, to be a co-host on this podcast. And I had probably about 5 people send it to me saying, you would be great at this. And I remember I looked at it and I said, you know what? I would be great at this. So I threw my hat. You got to believe in yourself, Sammy. All right. And so I threw my hat in the ring. I DM'd him. Of course, I never thought I would hear back. He had 2 million followers. I did hear back from him and I went through the process of, you know, auditioning for it. And I got to the very end. It was between me and this other girl. And I ended up losing to this other girl, but she was a professional soccer player and Olympian and had 100,000 followers on Instagram. So if you're going to lose to somebody, fine, right? I mean, I was up against pretty tough competition there. But Bob was like, hey, we really like you. We think you have something. Do you know how to sports gamble? Do you gamble on sports at all? I thought, well, I play fantasy. I haven't gambled on sports, but I can learn. You know, I can do anything. And he was like, okay, well, we have this other show that he was doing at the time called The Gambling Show. And it was with this guy, Timmy Bounce Back. And they were were just kind of given their picks and locks. And so I started that way, and I started just, I learned it myself, you know, reading articles and looking at different things. And I started doing content for The Gambling Show. It was me and this guy, Timmy Bounceback. And then I realized that, wow, I'm actually, you know, pretty good at this. One, gambling is like 50-50, right? You try to make a smart bet. So it's not like I'm the greatest gambler in the world. But as far as like the research and trying to find an edge and an angle, and I really enjoyed giving my game analysis. So I did that for a short amount of time. And then I was just doing it on my Instagram on Katie Mox Bets and started doing that. And then the pandemic hit, and I had been working in public relations for about 15 years, mostly on the fashion and beauty side. And then I had transferred into film. And when the pandemic hit, I was doing PR for at-home movies. So after they launch in theaters, a few months later, of course, they get released to DVD, digital, streaming, et cetera. And so we were doing campaign, PR campaigns around the digital releases. And so movies stopped coming out. So if they don't come out in theaters and they don't get released on digital, or they were going direct to digital, but there was no need for a big PR marketing campaign on something that really everybody was watching anyways. So I got laid off from my job in July of 2020. Mm. And I just said to myself, I was like, you know what, Katie, you can actually do this now. Let's try to figure out how to make this, you know, transition into sports betting and sports broadcast, because you have all the time in the world right now. You don't have this crazy full-time job. Let's try to figure this out. Now, of course, there was no real sports at the time. Basketball was just coming out, but I decided to really go for it and give it my all and 110%. And I said to myself, before the NFL season, before the 2021 NFL season, I will have this figured out. And I ended up getting the MSG opportunity right after Labor Day of 2021.
So in some weird way, it took a worldwide pandemic to get you into sports betting.
Yes.
Full time to get you all the way in, water wings off.
For me, I felt like the pandemic was, you know, 50-50 for a lot of people. For me, it was the biggest blessing.
And then you end up all the way across the country, you know, from where you grew up, from where you're rooted, from where your family is, you end up all the way across the country in New York. That's not an easy move, Mox.
It's not an easy move, but I will say what made it easier is that this is my second time living in New York. I had lived here about 10 years ago, just for under 2 years, so not super long. But since I was working in fashion for a long time, I would come to New York multiple times. So to move like that with like a whirlwind, and literally it was like I landed back in New York from testing, and then I had the job, and then I was moving just a couple of weeks later. Thank God it was a city that I actually liked and knew pretty well. Otherwise it would be much more overwhelming, but it still was quite a bit, you know, quite a lot to handle. But beyond, there's three things that I miss. One, my family. I'm super close to my family. Two, I didn't go to one 49ers game last year, which was like the biggest torture chamber for me of my life. And then Disneyland is like another weird thing. My family and I really like to go to Disneyland, so I haven't been able to do that either.
What's the best part about Disneyland?
Oh my God. Well, the magic is the best part about Disneyland. I feel like
you are a fucking PR person. Listen to you.
I'll PR your ass right out of here. I mean, I've been going, there was two things that I did as a child. You know, we had a family of four, my siblings are triplets. And so we weren't going on crazy vacations. There was a lot of us, family of six. And we went to Disneyland every year. And then we also went, my dad is from the Chicago area, and his family owns a lake house in northern Wisconsin. And then we go to Wisconsin for a couple weeks every summer. So that's what my family does. We do football, we do Wisconsin, and we do Disneyland.
How competitive is the Mox family?
Extremely competitive.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where it's in your blood. I always had the mom that was like screaming excessively loud and embarrassing you. And then now I've turned into that mom when I'm watching television, I'm watching sports. I'm in my apartment screaming like a lunatic. And I'm sure they think this like nice, blonde, docile girl is so sweet until football season comes around. And they're like, who is this psycho I'm living next to?
Well, look, if you don't grow up in that family and you don't have that competitive drive, you're just not the person you are today. And there's no sugarcoating that.
True. I'm thankful.
So when it comes to competition, does Trey Lance give San Francisco the best chance to win a Super Bowl?
It's so hard for me. Here's one. I'm a very big Jimmy Garoppolo fan. And I know a lot of people think it's because he's so good looking, and I can separate the two. I can appreciate how good looking he is. And they can also appreciate what he's done for the 49ers. And I understand a lot of the arguments against Jimmy Garoppolo. One, that he's injury prone. There's really no way to argue against that. And two, that he does make mistakes and that he does kind of have a high turnover rate. But you look at people like Matt Stafford, and so does he. And he was still able to win a Super Bowl. Now, I'm not necessarily comparing the two, the no look tutty and all that, of course, Jimmy Garoppolo does not do. But if you look at where the 49ers were, basically the same team without Jimmy Garoppolo, and then you look at them with Jimmy Garoppolo, we win with Jimmy and we don't win without him. So I'm not going to sit here and bash Jimmy Garoppolo. I haven't seen enough of Trey Lance for me to say he's the next Messiah. You know how sports fans are, right? It's like, as soon as the new draft comes in, it's like, oh, he's the second coming of Christ and we have to give him everything. And it's like, okay, pump the brakes here. He's still a rookie. He's still going to need some time to get better. But I will say, I trust Kyle Shanahan. I trust John Lynch. Whatever they decide is going to be what works for me. I don't think they're just going to offload Jimmy Garoppolo because we got to be able to get something for him. He is a good quarterback. The surgery kind of got in the way of him moving in the offseason. I don't want to say hopefully. Hopefully someone gets injured. If someone gets injured, hopefully not. But if someone gets injured, then I think we'll see Jimmy move in training camp, which will be good. But look, if Jimmy comes back, then Trey Lance is going to have to beat out Jimmy Garoppolo. And if Trey Lance does, then of course he's ready. Let's go. If he doesn't, then he's not ready yet.
That's still a 10-win team either way, though, I feel like. Even if it is Jimmy or Trey, like the way that the Shanahan teams work, they build a solid offensive line. They can move the football on the ground through the air. Just don't turn the football over. And I think that's the biggest issue with a lot of teams in the NFL. They try and get too cute. They throw the football away. They fumble the football. And then before you know it, the sky's falling down. But I mean, you look at the win total, 10. I wouldn't go under 10. And I'm not just saying that. You know, the Rams, yeah, the Rams are good. But the Niners are just as good. And they went just as far in a lot of ways last season, just couldn't hold that lead the NFC title game.
I agree 100%. When you talk about getting too cute too, that's one of the downfalls of Kyle Shanahan. He is such an offensive mastermind, but sometimes he outcoaches himself.
Yep.
And he gets himself into trouble that way. And again, I know with the Super Bowl, a lot of people blame Jimmy for that, but I think some of that should be blamed on Kyle Shanahan too. And a lot of that play calling, and sometimes in these really big games, Kyle tends to outcoach himself a little bit. He tries to get too smart, too cute. And then he ends up making bad decisions, but I agree with you. And you know, I do believe there's something to be said about the Super Bowl hangover. I feel like we see it more times than not, and thinking that this Rams team is just going to come back 100%. Look, it didn't happen for the Bucks the season before. So I think the 49ers have a really good chance. I thought that they did pretty good in the draft. The Debo Samuel stuff is kind of disappointing, but I do think that he's coming back. He's at training camp. He seems to be in good spirits. They're going to figure out what the deal is. We love him in San Francisco. John Lynch has said over and over again, they're going to get him paid. And, you know, we've also got some more running backs to help share that load, because the whole wide back situation, even though Debo Samuel did coin that term and put it on a t-shirt, and I think is very proud of it, we do need to help him in that regard because we want him to last longer.
I found two bets that are both priced about the same. Now, San Francisco at points bet to win the NFC is plus 750. Steph Curry is 8-1 to score 40 points again in this series.
Ooh.
Which one would you rather make?
The Niners and the NFC West. I feel better about that. I mean, Steph Curry, what did he have, 42 or 43 points in the last game, which was phenomenal. I don't expect him to be able to repeat that again. Of course, the Celtics are going to make some adjustments. And I really believe in this Niners team. And I think that there's going to be a little bit of a Super Bowl hangover. We know the Cardinals fall apart in the second half of the season. I don't know what Cliff Kingsbury is doing over there, but he can't make it last for an entire season. And they've got a lot of weird stuff going on with Kyler Murray as well. The Seahawks, they're not going anywhere. So I would take the Niners.
Yeah, Seahawks might win like four games.
What are they doing? Well, and I've heard too that they could be interested, of course, in Jimmy, but the Niners don't want to release him and then just have him go over to the Seahawks. But I don't know what they're doing. And it seems to be, who's their big running back that didn't show up at training camp?
Chris Carson?
No, not Chris Carson. Not running back. I'm sorry. Wide receiver.
Oh, it's either Metcalf or Lockett then.
Yeah, Metcalf wasn't showing up for some of the training camp stuff, and it was not agreed upon like the Jimmy Garoppolo stuff is. Now, I don't know if that's still happening, but something to look into.
Well, that's a team where you trade Russell Wilson, you're clearly not trying to win, and they're going to start potentially two tackles. Like, I know they're going to start Charles Cross. They might start Abraham Lucas. So their plan this year, and I use air quotes around plan, two rookie tackles and either Drew Lock or Geno Smith at quarterback. You can't possibly sell the fan base that you're trying to win.
No, no. Well, then in that case, it's like, you know, Metcalf's a little bit disgruntled and he's not showing up for things. Do you think it's something where do you trade Metcalf and do you just try to tank the whole season or do you just try to win some games?
Well, the GM and Pete Carroll are trying to hang on as long as they can. I know Pete's got a long deal. I think he's got like 4 more years on his contract. I think without knowing for sure, I don't have a fly in that wall, but I'm guessing they are trying to win 2, 3, 4 games. Draft C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young with the number one or number two pick and then sort of retool on the fly, not rebuild on the fly.
Yeah, that's smart. That makes sense.
Well, unless you draft the wrong quarterback, unless you draft Ryan Leaf.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Do you think – sorry, I know you're interviewing me, but just out of curiosity.
Oh, I like this. I like this.
Okay, good. I'm curious what you think, because obviously I have very strong opinions about Jimmy Garoppolo. Where do you see him, you know, because I think from an outside perspective, that's not a Niners fan, but you're also a smart fan and not someone that's like overly emotional about things. Where do you think Jimmy, do you think Jimmy stays? Do you think they release him or do you think someone gets him?
I would run it back one more year with Garoppolo. I honestly would, because as you have already sort of colored, he is the most winning quarterback in that system, and that team has been at its best with him. Now, that being said, you eventually have to pay the piper. You can't trade the farm for a quarterback, take him third overall, and then not use him. Jimmy's the one-year plan. Trey Lance is the 10-year plan, and eventually you have to change that and make that decision. But I would go one more year with Garoppolo. I honestly would. I know you're paying him a lot of money, but still, you have a veteran-laden team in a lot of ways. You got to get him out there one more time. That's what I would do.
I feel like we just became best friends because that is what I've been saying now for years. You know, because we said we can afford to keep Jimmy for, I think, 1 to 3 years. Now, 3, of course, is too much. But also, let's look at what happens when quarterbacks get injured. The fact that you have two viable quarterbacks in a pretty competitive division, come on.
It happened in Philadelphia when they had, what, Nick Foles and Carson Wentz. They went with the kid. The kid got hurt, and it was the vet, Nick Foles, took him to the Super Bowl. And if anything, doesn't it make sense to where, let's say you keep Jimmy around, it makes Trey Lance better. It makes him want to compete more. It grows the game for him. There's some truth to that.
I agree. And Jimmy is a really big locker room guy and he has a lot of leadership in the locker room and a lot of the players really like and respect him as a leader, not just as a player, but as a leader. And I do think that you can't really overlook those locker room guys either.
I have to ask you a question about the betting exchange. Can you, let's see, give me the best thing about your show and the one thing about your show you'd like to change.
Ooh. So the best thing about our show is it's very entertaining because I feel like sometimes, you know, we're trying to attract the newer audience of sports gamblers where it's more about that wagertainment. Now, I did not coin that term, but it's a term that I use a lot. And so I think the betting exchange does a really good job of keeping things fun and punchy and like moving things along. I think, you know, not a criticism, but what I would like to see more of is just a little bit more in-depth analysis. And I've seen this actually on your Nesson show about, you know, the series and where you can find the value after, you know, as the games shift and move and as the odds shift and move and kind of where those bets are now. So we don't do a lot of that stuff, which I would love to see more on because I think it's really valuable for the viewers to see that kind of stuff. But I will say that the betting exchange does a good job of just being like a super fun show and not necessarily taking ourselves too seriously, but providing good information and trying to have a good time.
It looks, feels, sounds like the three of you have known each other for a decade. And I'm going to guess that's not how it's been.
No, we, thank you. I love that. And we are super close. We're like three musketeers, but we, no, we just met in September.
Come on. September. That's it.
Yes, that's it. September. And it's funny, you know, Eric Coleman is a former New York Jet. So he's got the professional side of it. And he can really speak to football on a level that none of us ever could. And certainly with players and how they're feeling and you know, about bigger things that happen in the league. So he's super valuable there. And Jeff, of course, is a really big basketball fan. He works at Bleacher Report as well. So he's super tapped into the sports world. And then I'm kind of more of like the gambling personality. But I do think the three of us, we kind of have our different lanes. But like you said, we get along so well. And it's just, it's a fun time.
I would have thought for sure you guys had done things together in the past, one way, shape, or form. But it sounds like that's a testament to the team and the chemistry and the crew to get the three of you who just met and started working together in September. It hasn't even been a year yet, and there's this familial feel to that group.
Amazing. Thank you. And, you know, same to you guys. And I've been following Claudia for a while. I think she's fantastic. And I've been following your show. I see the clips and stuff, and it is the best gambling show. It's really great.
Well, I appreciate that. But I think there's competition in the market. Competition is good for our show. It's good for your show. It's good for every show. And look, the ones I think that balance, you used entertainment, and I think entertainment on a television show is number one. It has to be number one. You don't want to watch three librarians breaking down a football game. But you have to balance the information side of it with the education. I look at it sort of like a triangle where entertainment's on top and then information and education are the pillars at the bottom. If you can ring that triangle multiple times on a show, that's the best type of show.
I agree. And to, you know, it is a challenge too, right? Because sports betting is a lot of analytics. It's a lot of numbers. And so trying to balance out how to make it fun, but still valuable information isn't as easy, I think, as a lot of people would assume that it is.
When the Warriors win the title, you will do blank. What will you do?
Oh, well, one, I'll probably cry when they win the title. That'll be my first reaction will be tears of joy. And then, well, happy tears,
sure.
Sam. I know how it is when your team wins. It's just, it's weirdly, you feel like you're a part of it. It's special. So I'll cry, and then I will probably, with my winnings, you know, as lame as it sounds, just reinvest it and try to keep it moving.
Sounds like a Niners ticket is coming.
Oh, I'll put on the Niners to win the NFC. How about that?
Wow, look at that. Look at that.
You just figured it out for me. I'm pumped. We got it. You know what? We got to keep the Bay Area moving forward. Let's go.
That's Katie Mox. Please follow on Twitter at Katie Mox, M-O-X, host of The Betting Exchange on MSG at MSG Networks. I'm pulling for you. I want your Warriors to win. I'm a little selfish in that myself, but who doesn't love a good championship cry?
I feel better with you on my side, I got to say.
Thanks, Katie. That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Katie Mox from MSG for hopping on the show. We've got one in the hopper here. Mark Williams over 12.5 at -130. And that thing is on the move. -185 already at DK. And PointsBet still off the board. So we shall see how that shakes out. And we're going to keep it this way. If you want a draft bet, you may want to follow Chicken Dinner. Set up the notifications. Because anything from that account forward, leading up to the draft, is likely going to be a draft bet. And as you know, from following Mike and Chicken Dinner over the last handful of drafts, NFL and NBA, these markets are going to move, and they're going to move fast. So if you can get -130, 35, 40 on Mark Williams in the coming days, awesome. We'll see what happens when PointsBet goes back up at DraftKings. They're going to probably have that number, 13.5, before you know it. Right team, right price. Right player, right price. Coming up on the show, Will Hill will join us. William Hill will join us. He's the host of the New York City Cast. Also does some work for VEASAN. Cash up tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner.